Welcome to Show and Tell with the Two Mortgage Guys. We come to you live every Tuesday on Facebook and YouTube at noon. Today, we're interviewing Kim Sitong with RE/MAX A New Realty. We're discussing realtor versus for sale by owner options when buying and selling a property. Is it worth hiring a realtor? And all more. Stick around.
So Kim is the broker owner of RE/MAX A New Realty. She boasts 20 years in the real estate industry, which has enabled her to become an expert problem solver and agent. Her main focus is on simplifying the real estate process for her clients and going above and beyond their expectations. She's actively involved around the community of Tipton. That includes serving as a board of director for several boards, a member on committees, Tipton County Chamber of Commerce Business Person of the Year in 2014, and a sponsor for a variety of events and functions. One of Kim's favorite things to give back to her community is the RE/MAX A New Realty Scholarship. Each year, she offers a $1,000 scholarship to a student from Tipton High School and one from Tri-Central High School. And that's for anyone who's attended a two-year program or a tech school. On a personal note, she has three awesome kids and three adorable grandsons that make life so much fun. Her best buddy is Stella Blue, a French bulldog, who you can find on most days with her at the office. Let's welcome Kim to the show, everyone.
Hi, guys.
Hey. Kim, how are you?
Good, about you?
Good. Hey, before we get into anything, right, I didn't realize you were doing those scholarships. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we like that.
Down in there. That's awesome. Good for you doing that.
How long have you done that?
Since I started RE/MAX, back 5 years ago.
Yeah.
We partnered with the Tipton County Foundation to start that.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
And then we have to also talk about your dog. Have we met Stella Blue? Because I don't know that I can't.
I don't remember Stella being in the office.
She's actually here today, but I locked her out because she's a little bit of a distraction. Yeah, so. Yeah.
That could have got our ratings really high if we had a dog on the show.
She's with the girls outside.
Did you used to have a different dog? Did you have a dog before Stella?
I used to have a poodle that went to work with us back in the day.
That's what I remember.
That was Daisy. She was a little 5-pound poodle. So we kind of graduated to 23-pound French bulldog.
Nice.
Yeah.
We appreciate you taking time out of your day to come on the show. We want to talk about a subject that we have conversations with clients all the time about,
right?
And that is, what is the, you know, what's the difference in working with a realtor, or what's the benefit of working with a realtor versus, you know, maybe buying or selling a home on my own? And let's talk about kind of the selling side first.
Okay. When you're a seller, I think the biggest thing is in this market, you can get lookers. That's not hard. I mean, there's always people that are beating down your door, even before you list a home, if they think you're going to sell it, at least in my market. So when you're a seller, the biggest thing that you're going to get is the knowledge and the person that will help you navigate through what's best to do at the time, depending on your market. But like, pricing is a big thing, how to get your home ready for the person to come in. Also, once you do get buyers, are they pre-approved, and are they going to be pre-approved when they come in your door? How are you going to navigate through the purchase agreement? What if there's an escalation clause? What if there is a first right? They want to have a house to sell first. How are you going to do that? Escalation clauses, all those things that we factor in that actually help you arrive at the best offer. Not always just how much you get for your offer, but what are the things they want from me? It's all important, and it becomes part of the negotiation. And lots of times as sellers, I don't believe that you can negotiate on your best half for yourself sometimes, because it's personal. And sometimes you have to take the personal out and let the business side come out. So if you hire an agent, you will have a person that doesn't have all the feel goods that you do about it, and can see the better business side of it to make the deal happen. So sometimes it's a benefit. Plus, by pulling up statistics from NAR in 2020, 7% of the home sales were up for sale by owner. And typically the statistics showed a home for sale by owner got 260 compared to being listed, they sold for around 318. So you often get more out of your home when you have the professional there to help guide you and get the buyers that are in that, you know, pool that will actually make your price go up. So you think you're saving money, but you're not always saving money. Sometimes you're losing yourself some money.
Perfect. That's awesome. Because that was one of the questions I was gonna ask on that is what's the difference when you see that price point with it? Because people always are worried about paying the fees out. But at that same point, like you said, they could pay out the fees on that, but they're still making way more money listing it than they are trying to do it on their own.
Right. Yep. That's what we think. And then for a buyer.
Hey, before we get into the buyer. I've seen in the last year, I've seen more verbiage on these contracts, more things to negotiate than we've had in the previous two decades. Like you're talking about contingency offers, appraisal gap. Like there's just so many things now that are coming up because of the competitiveness out there.
Right.
And I bet your average seller doesn't even know that's an option. They don't know how to negotiate what they don't know.
Right. The biggest one I think that we've lately is escalation clauses have been big, but also the appraisal gap. That's become a big issue because people, they're offering in some cases, the market's kind of cooled a little bit lately, but there for a while we were seeing people come in and offer you some astronomical price just to get you to look at their offer.
Right.
But then if they didn't have an appraisal gap, it still had an appraise. So you can offer me what you want, but if it has to appraise, then I know, you know, it's not going to, that's probably not going to fly. So they started doing appraisal gaps. So they would say, okay, I'm going to offer you $50,000 more, and I'm going to cover up to $25,000 out of my pocket for an appraisal gap if that happens. So there's different kind of language that goes along with that. That's real important that you make sure everyone's on the same page. And the appraisal gap was it's been a big driving thing lately for lots of markets that we have.
So if I list my home with you and offers are coming in, you're as my agent, you're sitting down with me and you're saying, okay, Ryan, here's what's being presented to you. Mm-hmm. Here's what this means. You know, here's what's been happening lately. I think this is, you know, this looks like a reasonable offer, unreasonable offer. I mean, are you able to offer that kind of advice?
Well, that's exactly what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to go through every offer and line them out and say, okay, what I do is I do net sheets. So I would show them, okay, here's offer number one, lined out with everything that they have. If it's, you know, what kind of financing it is, how much money they're putting down, if it's appraisal gap, if not appraisal gap, if it's cash, do they have to have an appraisal? Are they doing inspections? And we line out every offer we have. So if we have 11 to 15 offers, they're all sitting in front of you, and we're going to go through them one by one and decide which ones fit the best. And also, I encourage people to, if you take an offer, offer someone to be a backup, because I feel like in this market, we see a lot of people that are paying more than they listed for. So they get an inspection, and sometimes it scares them away. So they'll walk away, not because it's a major, but they're paying you more than that they wanted to anyway. So then they walk away. So a backup is always a great thing to be, because we do see them fall apart a lot more lately. I think just because of that, not because the house has something wrong. It's just the mindset that I'm giving you $25,000 more than you asked for it, and now I have to fix these items.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like that's part of what you're paying for when you get an agent, to help you navigate through and decide, you know, how this, because you don't want to go back through showing your house to everybody all the time. So if you get a backup, at least you know that you don't have to go through that process again if something does go awry with the first offer.
Yeah, especially depending on that seller, like where the house is located, if they've got pets or whatever, right? Of getting people in and out. If they've got that backup offer up front, like you said, they don't have to worry about relisting it again to put it back out.
So those are all important things that affect a seller.
So from the buyer's perspective, so somebody wakes up and, you know, today's the day. They want to go and see what's on the market, and they're tired of renting. That's usually the scenario, right?
Right. And they want to buy a home. That's what we hear anyways, and they call us, right?
Right. Oh, I'm wasting money. And it's true. You know, real estate's an amazing investment. But so what's the first thing they should do as a buyer? You know, and how should that process look like for them to find a home and get in a contract and get close?
Well, the first thing I would say, if I was a buyer, I would contact a person that can help me get started. So I would look for a realtor that I know somebody recommended or I'm familiar with, and start to get some rapport with that person. Maybe sit down with that realtor to talk about what this process looks like. And then as a realtor, I'm going to suggest that we get you pre-approved. As the first thing I want you to do is to know where you're at, like what price range you want to be in or need to be in, what kind of home we're looking for. Is it FHA, USDA, or is it a conventional? Because all those are going to be different factors when you're looking for certain homes. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of make sure that you are on the right track. So you're ready to buy one if we find one. So the first thing I want to do is explain to them the process and get them connected with someone like you to get them on the right track, to get them ready to be pre-approved. And then once we get pre-approved, I set them up, well, before that, I usually set them up to start getting auto emails and start sending them home so they can start looking to familiarize themselves with the market. And then we start looking at homes. And I always suggest that as a buyer that you're ready, because as soon as you don't have that pre-approval, lots of times they'll say, well, I'm going to wait, see if I find a home. Well, in this market, that's not a good idea, because sure as the world, you're going to find a home over the weekend. You're going to be ready to write an offer. And now you're not pre-approved. So the seller is not going to take you very seriously in lots of cases, or going to set you aside because you're not as strong as the next person is that has that pre-approval letter.
Yeah.
So always tell them to go ahead and get the pre-approval letter. It's not going to hurt you to have it in our file for you, ready to go when we find that home. So that's the first thing I would have them do. And then, like I said, start going through the inventory to see what fits their needs and what they want to look for in a home.
Right. And to find it, we have a similar conversation because like the same thing there, people are normally worried like, oh, I don't want to waste my pre-approval, mm-hmm. you know, until they find the house. But, you know, we always go back. It's good for 4 months or 120 days. Right. So it gives them time to, like you said, have that in your back pocket, because if you find that house on a Sunday evening, you're going to want to be in a position to go ahead and write the offer.
And I also try to suggest that they don't get online and start putting their name into every online thing, because lots of times that's not good for their credit scores, we know.
And right.
I myself always like to prefer they work with somebody that we can talk to face to face if we need to, because it makes it a lot easier to navigate if you have people that you can actually meet with if you need, not always, but sometimes you can meet with them if you have to.
Right.
So I try to keep them a little bit, like tell them not to spend money. Don't go change jobs. Don't go buy a new car. Try to, you know, stay low as you can on spending your money so you don't change your status also. Because a lot of people understand that once you get pre-approved, doesn't mean it's a done deal. You have to stay. You got to stay in your job. You got to stay in your car.
You can't quit your job after you're pre-approved?
What? You probably shouldn't quit your job. After after you get closed, maybe, but not too then.
That they call it in our industry, it's a ability to repay. So that the underwriter has to look at it at the beginning and the end to make sure nothing really changed, like you said.
And a lot of people don't understand that. If they've never bought a home, they feel like it's buying a car. Well, it's a lot more detail than buying a vehicle. It stays with you for a lot longer of a process, and you got to stay not changing what you look like on there.
Let's talk about that home list. So, So I come to you and I say, all right, here's what's important to me. I need a 4-bedroom home because I've got a bunch of kids, right? And I really want a 2-car garage and I love a certain school district. You're then able to take that, those requirements, if you will, and put those in a computer system somehow that will what? Notify them when a home meets that criteria?
Yes. So what we do is we put them into the MLS system, and as soon as the home pops up that, like you said, meets their criteria and their whatever they have, money-wise, school district, it will send them notification when it hits the market, or if a price changes or if it goes back on the market, it's going to send them the notification of it. So it will send it to myself plus them at the same time so that they're going to have it right at their fingertips anytime a status changes or a new one comes on the market.
So that's worth it right there. I mean, right. Mm-hmm. So as a buyer, that's worth it, because in this market, these homes that are coming on the market are selling rather quickly, and you might not see it until a weekend, and by then it's in contract.
Right. Keep in mind, in Tipton, I just usually give them all of them, because Tipton has like 12 in the whole county for sale right now. So
every home.
I really don't need to know exactly what you want. You're just going to get them all, because there's not going to be that many.
Right.
But
hey, I got a question on the MLS. So for that, like that's mainly realtors have direct access to that, but like lenders don't and a consumer doesn't. So with real estate agents, when you get the contract to list a house, is that what you do, is go back, you put it in that MLS multiple listing service and then stick the sign in the yard? Is that how it normally works, or when's it go on? Because it gets shared to Realtor.com and Zillow and all these other third parties.
Yeah.
That's after it's been entered the first time in MLS, correct?
Well, no. As soon as you put it in MLS, you can click where you want it to go. So as soon as I make it live, it will feed into Realtor.com, Zillow, anybody else's website. It depends on how it goes in. It could be 15 minutes. It could do it within 5. But
it goes through and cycles them in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
However they feed, the feed goes into those. Yeah, it goes pretty quick. Right. So sometimes some of them are a little slower than others, but typically if we're sending it directly to you, as soon as it goes live, you're going to get it, the email for it.
So if that falls in that like category Ryan was talking about earlier, when it gets into that MLS, is that when that person gets an email then saying, hey, this falls within your categories?
And yeah.
So that's beneficial because they're getting to know about it before maybe somebody else is.
Right. They'll get it instantly as soon as it goes live.
Yeah. Awesome.
So one other thing, let's say you're a buyer and you stumble across the property and it's for sale by owner. Okay. Uh-huh. So, maybe I've already reached out to you, Kim, and I've already put together a plan with you, but I found this home. It's for sale by owner. Should I call them directly? Should I call you? What are my options as a buyer?
Well, I typically tell my sellers, if you see anyone sign or you see it for sale by owner, call me and I will reach out to the seller to see, if they're working with agents and what exactly is going on with the property. Sometimes buyers like to do it themselves, but I feel like it's not always the best suit for them, that they'd be better off to let someone else represent them and ask the questions that need to be asked. So typically I ask them to refer to me so I can do it. Or if I see it for someone owner, I'll just call them myself if I think I have a client that might fit that.
Yeah.
And just say, hey, are you working with an agent? Will you let us bring in buyers and pay us a fee for the buyer's side? So lots of times sellers are open to do that also. But they have to understand that you're representing the buyer when you do that.
Right. We've seen some crazy contracts where somebody went directly to the seller on a for sale by owner transaction. And there's so many things they didn't think to address in the contract, right?
Yeah, that's the problem that I see a lot is they don't understand that you should talk about taxes, when you're going to start paying taxes, what's going to stay, not going to stay. I mean, it's not just how much you're going to pay for it. It's what are you going to do? What are they going to do? Is there a survey? Is there not a survey? The other thing is that a lot of people don't understand. They'll call me and say, hey, can I have a form? Can you send me a purchase agreement? I can't send you my purchase agreement. That will get me in some trouble. You cannot have it. You can get one online. And sure, you can call an attorney and have them draw one up. That's not a problem either. But they don't negotiate for you on your behalf. And they don't know you should get an inspection. Order title work. I mean, all of that is lined out, and that's what you're paying for someone to make sure all those things are taken care of for you. So, anyone can stick a sign in the yard, but it's the things that go on behind the scene that is important to you as a buyer to make sure you're covered and that you're doing everything that you know to do. Also, home warranties, that's something that we can have out there that you could have. A lot of times buyers would buy one potentially for themselves or have the seller pay for one, but if they don't know that that's an option, then they can't ask for it. So those are the things that we have that we can bring to the table to make it a smoother transaction for both sides.
Right. And then on the other piece, like you were talking about that earlier, approach them yourself, and it's different. It's not like you're going to go buy a used car, right? Or you're going to drive around in it and you're okay walking around it and test driving it, but like a house is different. There's just like you said, for ones like the home warranties, but then there's the home inspector part of it and the appraisal part of it, which is other sets of eyes that get fed in on that. So it is a detailed process. And if like Ryan said, I can remember we looked at one time that was somebody did it for sale by owner. It was like one page compared to like the Indiana real estate one, but it's because of all the pieces that need to be put in there to protect them.
Right.
That you need that, not one page, but multiple pages.
Yeah, it was two pages when I started real estate, buying real estate, not started real estate years ago. And now we've grown to more because we know there's more things out there and there's more, just like escalation clauses weren't heard of 5 years ago, Appraisal gaps. What's appraisal gap? I mean, that's not something that we've ever heard of until the last couple of years, right? So it's ever changing and it's always evolving. So you want to make sure you have someone that is in that market and can help you navigate the best you can do.
Right. Well, Kim, we know that you know the answers to these questions and that you've done this for a long time and that you're somebody that prospective buyer or seller should be reaching out to. So how's the best way to get a hold of you or your agents?
My cell phone's the best way to get me. That's always, I have it with me all the time. The office, you can call the office. We always have someone on staff. We're open 9 to 4:30. We have 4 hours. There's always an agent here. If you don't have an agent, that will be happy to talk to you and walk you through the process and get you started. And we also have emails. I mean, Facebook. We have all those avenues too. But I would say the best thing to do is call my cell phone or text me.
Right. Yeah. So that goes. So, So that, which is awesome. But like, cause you said you've been in it when it was two pages. So you go back to that same point. That was before cell phones too. Or if it wasn't, it was at the very beginning, right? Or,
in the very beginning, you had to go pick the keys up to go show a house.
So a lot of changed over the years.
Right.
All evolving on it. So that's awesome. Well, awesome, Kim. Thanks so much. Hey, before we say goodbye to Kim, if do you have anything else you want to try to bring in that we didn't update today? Covered about everything.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, I'm not very good at this. You know that, right?
So. Oh, no, you did. That's great. It was like all that stuff on it. It's awesome. So, like, if you guys like this, just like this video. You can share it. If you've got any questions that pop up, then just put it down in the comment section. We'll make sure Kim gets the information, then she can get all that back out to us, and then we'll go from there. So we'll see everybody next Tuesday at noon. Kim, thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kim.
See ya.
All right, next week, Steve and I are going to be talking with my brother, Matt Minnick at State Farm Insurance. We'll be talking about using life insurance to pay off your mortgage, why you should have your life insurance policy separate from your employer's, how very little this will all cost you, and more. Be sure to watch us next Tuesday at noon.